It's Pride Month, Joe.
Collapsus Maximus.
Are you feeling proud?
Of what?
It's Pride Month.
I don't care.
Oh. Last Sunday was nuts. We finished the show and was like, meh, not much happening. But we obviously were aware of what was coming up.
Yes.
In elections all over Europe. But I didn't think much of what's going to happen out of that, because there have been European Union elections before with the European Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? Meh. But what's interesting is what the people in the two biggest countries in Europe that matter, how they approach it. Record turnout. They bother turning up, which is unusual, like 56% in France.
Mm.
It's the highest turnout ever. And then, yeah, it all started coming apart. Or did it? It certainly seems that way. Obviously, what happened in France is the biggest shocker. 31% voted. It's more than that. I think it's 34% voted for the far right. Or END, they're called now, Rassemblement National. Germany saw the AfD win the biggest share of the vote there. I think that was maybe expected too. But it's not quite the same earthquake as in France, because like Macron's party, by comparison, got 15%
mm-hmm.
of the vote, which is why he immediately called a snap election in France. Parliamentary election, not obviously for his seat in the French presidential system, the executive. He would remain president, but he dissolves government. He makes a televised address and he confidently dissolves government and says, okay, election in at the end of this month. So barely 3 weeks out from last week.
Yeah, but obviously that wasn't, you know, obviously he didn't decide in the moment or, you know, a few hours after the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Right, this was something that was planned, probably weeks or more, or months in advance, you know. He has no parliamentary majority, hasn't had for 1 or 2 years since they lost the parliamentary majority. So he's not, you know, hasn't been really effective. Government hasn't been really being able to run the country effectively. On several occasions had to push through by decree, basically.
Yeah.
Push through laws because he couldn't get a vote, a majority vote in Parliament. And I think this autumn there was going to be no confidence vote in his over the budget or something like that, and the government probably would have fallen or collapsed or something like that. It would have been ousted in one way or another in this autumn anyway. So
there would have been an election anyway,
probably of some description. Yeah, he was. I mean, Macron, his particular type his particular policies or his particular type of. Picture of ideas about how to run the country haven't been popular for a very long time, you know what I mean? Since really, you know, certainly for the past 4 years, I'd say. We got a couple of years maybe in on grace after 2017 and the first time, and I have suspicions about his second election victory. But anyway, he hasn't been very popular in the country at all for a very long time. And, you know, and he's not the kind of person to just, you know, bow out gracefully, you know.
But if it's probable that he's going to have less seats in his favour, in either his LREM party, whatever they're called now, it's been rebranded 3 times, or any other coalition, prospective liberal Paris First people types, he's going to have far less. I mean, the current polling has an outright majority or close to it for Marine Le Pen's.
Yeah.
Is it Marine Le Pen's? I'm confused. Is it this young 28-year-old Bardella's party now? And Le Pen is the god mistress? No, it's her party.
Well.
But he is the leader. Anyway.
There's a leader of a party and then it's no one person's party, right? There's a leader who's elected and then can change whatever. So.
Okay. What did you think of the hilarity that ensued with the French traditional right there was some drama.
Well, did you have a question there about the beforehand about Macron, the wisdom of his action or something like that? Or were you going to say something about...
Well, surely if he knows what he's doing and he saw it months ahead of time and the result is going to be he's trounced, he will become even... He'll become a lame duck president for the last 3 years of his presidential term.
Yeah, but it might have happened anyway.
Okay. It's coming sooner or later. He's chosen this moment to collapse
to try and... Yeah,
to try and win.
Well, there's a report, supposedly, like there's a report in Le Monde, or it was reported by Le Monde, according to a confidant in the Elysee, claimed that Macron's taken it. What he said was that I've been planning this for weeks and I'm thrilled. I threw my unpinned grenade at their feet. Now they will see how they get on. Now we will see how they get on.
So Macron himself, maybe obviously, is going with genius move. Most of the establishment press, plus even the skeptics, are like, he's an idiot. This could be the moment where his true Jupiterian self gets through.
You have to remember that this is someone who wanted to rule, when he first was elected, said he wanted to rule France like Jupiter, like a Greek god.
Above the fray.
Yeah, well...
But loved by the people. He needs to be loved.
In a slightly transparent toga, while wearing...
While serviced by...
With oil on, with body oil and a slightly transparent... He's basically like, this is Macron, the kind of gay edgelord or something like that, deciding that if he can't have France, if he as Jupiter cannot have France, then no one can have it, and I will fuck the whole place up in particularly homosexual fashion.
It is Pride Month.
In a particularly hysterical, outrageous fashion, you know. I mean, he basically has the idea that, listen, if you don't want me, if you don't like me, which you obviously don't, and he's known that for a long time, well then he's not just going to walk away and leave it to whoever the opposition is in France. He's going to exploit the situation in France, exploit the political, the left-right division in France. And in a certain sense, he's saying, like, he knows, I mean, it was most of, in the vote in the European election, most votes went to the Front National, or the...
Now the RN.
Rassemblement National, the so-called far-right party.
French and party rebranding drive me nuts.
So he...
Oh, they all do.
It supposedly went to the far right, and he's not, I don't know if he's not happy about that or his advisors aren't happy with that, but this is seen as an opportunity, like, I mean, so the French people, you know, they don't like me and they're going to vote for the far right party in order to show their disapproval of me. Well then, you know, I'll let them have it, type thing. And that's more or less what he has claimed to have said to a reporter. That, you know, I'm going to give it over to, if you want far-right politics, have it, go ahead, do it, let's see what happens. And of course, you know, there's an implication within that, which is that you can have riots on the streets and you can have Antifa mobilized and black bloc kind of, mobilizations, so, and riots against no fascism, burn down the streets of Paris and all this kind of stuff. And, oh, so this is what you wanted, huh? You wanted the far right, you know? So it seems to be an effort, this bizarre effort that many people in the European establishment, and obviously in America as well, the establishment seem to be, you know, hysterically against anything, what they call the far right, you know, and they're willing to prevent it happening at any cost. Now, in comes, you know, like I said, gay edgelord Macron, and he's got a different way of doing it, rather than just calling them Nazis and fascists and saying are deplorables and they can never have power. He's saying, okay, let's give them power in France. Let them have power, and then let's see how they get on. But we're going to make it very difficult for them to have... You know, we're going to set them up so that we can prove to the French people once and for all that voting for the far right is a very bad idea. You know, whether, you know, and it won't necessarily be, you know, an honest assessment of the far right. They'll be, because, you know, they can, I mean, they kind of, in a certain sense, according to Liz Truss anyway, they did the same thing to Liz Truss. Liz Truss, when she was in her 44 days as British Prime Minister, she claimed that she was never given a chance, and that she was up against, you know, extreme, very, very powerful economic interests, i.e., you know, they basically threatened to crash the economy on her watch because of what she wanted to do. She wanted to
Bank of England.
She wanted to raise, not raise taxes, but decrease taxes, I think. And they weren't happy about that, so they, you know, she was. You know, they created a situation where she had created a crisis, let's say. They created a crisis and then said that she's the one who's created a crisis. You know, it's like somebody comes into power that you don't like. Maybe there's a button in the Bank of England or the Bank of France where you can say, create crisis, create 24-hour crisis, push the button. How do we do that? You know, that's a simplistic, obviously, version of it. But there may be ways and means for them to interfere in markets or whatever, or interfere in the economy of the country in a safe but in a controlled way, but that creates the appearance of some kind of a economic crisis over a short period of time. And that just happens to coincide with a new person coming into power, and then suddenly it's like, oh.
They did that the day after the Irish voted against the Lisbon Treaty in 2008. I remember I was there. The headlines were across the board, crash. We're heading for it. I was like, there was no hint of that before. Anyway, so you're going with, that's an interesting take. That sounds like the cohabitation theory the French media is talking about, where what happened, for example, in the 1990s, Jacques Chirac called a snap election and bet poorly because the result was that the left actually controlled parliament. Therefore, they got their man as prime minister. And cohabitation, the fallback for the other side's guy in the Elysee, in the executive in France, is that, well, okay, I lost, but now my opponents have to co-rule with me, and thereby it will tarnish or water down the support for them, such that in the next key election to 2027 in France for the Elysee, there'll be less interest, or hopefully destroyed support base for my opponent. So that's, but you're suggesting the cohabitation theory on steroids. You're suggesting a 2020 BLM, 56 cities, at least large sectors of downtown cities in the United States, burned to the ground type stuff. Well, riots, pallets of bricks put out in the streets, Molotov cocktails.
I'm just saying
NGOs act pushing, fanning the flames of.
I'm just saying that's an option for them to ignite that kind of thing. It would be sensitive in a certain sense because it'll be, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks before the
Olympics are held in Paris.
In Paris, so you'd want to keep it out of Paris at least. So, but if you can organize it so that it only happens in cities around the country, but not in Paris, then you can get away with it, I suppose. But this is just it's highly irresponsible. You know what I mean? It's like how does Macron and whoever? It's not really him. Like, I mean, like I said, he's just basically he's playing the role of kind of gay edgelord right
it's
now.
His wife,
maybe it's his quote unquote wife, but. It's whoever's behind the scenes with him. He's got advisors and that kind of stuff. And they've decided that, you know, they're going to play with fire. Or, you know, they're going to set French politics, or blow up France's political landscape in a certain sense. You know what I mean? Which is not really a responsible thing to do. You know what I mean? It's like, if people have just said, like, if you think about it coldly, like, it's been well known before now, and now in the polls of the European elections, basically the majority of the French population turned around and said, we don't like Macron or his party, get him out, piss off, we want someone else. And in response to that, he's going to blow up the French political landscape. Why? Why don't you just fuck off like people have just told you to? Because it's your Jupiterian responsibility to leave some legacy, or to work behind the scenes, or to make sure that your vision or his vision of how that he started in 2017, or how he wanted to change the political landscape and turn it into some kind. He wanted to destroy the original kind of left-right paradigm in French politics and turn it into like conservative, progressive, or something like that, or some hybrid, some transgender version.
It's Tony Blair's third way. It's the same shit we've seen since 1997.
Right. So that's what he tried to do. And he then, you know, represented that, and people have rejected it. But it's like, no, you're not allowed to go back to what was there before me. Like, his experiment has been a failure. You know, the French people have said, don't like it, get out, see you later. And he is not happy about that and wants to blow the whole thing up. And then you have some new synthesis out of the rubble of whatever he's planning to, whatever crisis he hopes will manifest from this, which will be like, you know, a right-wing government, maybe him booted out or whatever as well, and then mass social unrest over it, a very short-lived right-wing...
I can only see that happening in the cities, though.
Government.
Which then, all are on his side. The rest of France... You see, yeah. You saw the map.
Yeah, yeah,
they're painted blue.
In rural areas, yeah, forget about it.
You want to destroy the homesteads where your opponents are strongest, but if you're only going to get riots started where you're strongest.
Yeah. But we'll see.
Yeah, so he... Yeah, okay.
It's hard to know.
That's nuts. I think the main thing you're saying is that there's... Beware, there's a vindictiveness to his apparent utter failure that could play out here. You've not seen the last of him politically.
No, because, if you think about it, just stop at the election type thing. He just got voted out. There was a majority of the electorate that voted. They voted twice as many people voted for his opposition, the people who are most opposed to him, the quote-unquote far-right, than voted for him. So that's a vote of no confidence by the people in him and his policies that have been called.
It was like a referendum,
so, right. So that says that nobody wants your brand of Macron...
Macronie, they call it. Macronism.
Macronisms. Yeah. Nobody wants it. Nobody likes it. It's been given a fair chance. Nobody wants it. Go away. But he's decided that rather than just decide, okay, accept that he's no good at politics, let's say, at least in terms of politics that actually the people want, he's going to shape the way French politics and the way the French political landscape after him. That's how smart he is, right? But that flies in the face of the fact that he's just been told that he's shit at politics, he's shit at running a country, no one likes him, no one likes his policies, and he needs to go. I.e. go away into the dustbin of history, of political history. You have no more relevance. You know, you should be gone. You really don't know. You don't know enough or anything about, you know, running the country the way the French people want it run. So go away. But a normal person would take that and respond in that way. They would say, okay, tried my best. Don't want me. See you later. I'm off into the sunset. But not Macron, because he's a narcissistic.
He actually made a statement. He was asked and he announced that he would not be resigning. But then, you know, he said on the eve of this, the European Parliament election results, that it doesn't matter, this won't change the status quo at all. But then he calls a snap election. So we'll see, we'll have to wait and see. The spat on the right, we were following it. The update on this is that, so what happened was the traditional Conservative Party, which is much smaller in support, in France than now the quote-unquote far-right one. He was on TV, and his name is Ciotti, and he announced that he would be open to considering a coalition with the Rassemblement National. So members of his party revolted, attempted to take over party HQ in Paris this week. Ciotti locked himself in. The members forced their way in with police help. Ciotti refused to leave. The members announced to the press outside the building that their leader had been sacked. And then yesterday, in fact, Ciotti said, no, I'm not. Yesterday, a legal ruling, like a tribunal, like employer's tribunal or something, ruled in his favor and said that he is still the party leader. Furthermore, according to this Le Monde article, I won't put it up. It's in French. I only read it quickly on the way here. I think my reading of it is correct. ORN and the traditional centre-right party are going to put forward joint candidates, so one will stand for the other in about 70 seats in the election. So at the beginning of the week, it looked like, wow, Macron masterstroke, he split the right. But in fact, Ciotti, in hindsight now, was confident. That's why he was on TV saying what was until now the unspeakable.
Mm-hmm.
No one aligns with the untouchable far right. But he felt he could break that wall because there is movement on the other side to counter Macron.
Well, you can try and split the right, but the question is, who, you know, who will the people vote for? Who do the people see the right as? If the people just dismiss the traditional Republicans, the traditional Conservatives, which are, you know, have seen their favor, fallen in favor in recent years, they're kind of in the doldrums, really, and they don't get a lot of votes. If people don't see those as the right anymore, they only see there's someone national, the quote-unquote far-right, as the actual right, then he won't split anybody. He'll just have forced, not forced, but he's just have encouraged people, especially through his antics over the past week, to vote more on, even more en masse for what they see as
a stable alternative.
This is an example of what I was saying earlier on. It's in the it was in the Telegraph. Le Pen victory threatens Liz Truss-style debt crisis in France. That's you know, maybe setting it up, or whatever. But it's an example of what they can do, right? And Liz Truss at the time said her quote there. I think it's underneath you. I'm not claiming to be blameless in what happened in terms of their 44 days of rule, but fundamentally it was not given a realistic chance to enact my policies by a very powerful economic establishment, coupled with a lack of political support. So basically, you know, Liz Truss had a
coup.
Liz Truss debt crisis, yeah, an economic coup in a certain sense, or a coup by economic means, by showing that, look, suddenly that person's in power and suddenly the economy's gone to shit just because of
natural forces.
Just because of what they said. All they have to do is say something.
And the market sentiment.
The market shit its pants and the whole country's going to collapse, apparently, you know. So it's possible that'll happen. You'll have something like that after July 7th, when probably Le Pen's party here is able to form a government one way or another, either outright or with some conservative, traditional conservative party members who would join her group. And then you might have a bunch of, like I said, a bunch of Antifa riots in the street, no fascism, no Hitlerism, no Nazism in France, burn down some things, you know, and then Macron will appear on the scene and say, look, do you want me back to calm all this down, you know what I mean?
It's horseshit on so many levels. Like, for one, France is in a debt crisis because it's given so much to the EU and directly to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be thrown into a debt crisis by Le Pen. If anything, she'd make savings on Ukraine and pull them out of the debt. So,
but that's not how it works, apparently.
The interesting tie-in, they themselves pointed to the Liz Truss coup to send a hint. That's smart. Diabolical, but smart. We've mentioned that the figure, I think it was 33% for RN. There's an additional almost 6% that went to a splinter group of the RN, which is the niece of Jean-Michel. Was that his name? Jean-Marie Le Pen, who founded RN when it was Front National. That's Marion Maréchal. She's been in, for some reason, she was in Zemmour's camp in the party he started when he ran first in 2022. And they got almost 6%. So when you combine the two quote-unquote far-right factions, you get closer to 39% versus the 15% that Macron's status quo got. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a 3-1 almost.
And although it should be mentioned that in response to this, all of this, the left, again, you have to remember that in 2017, Macron comes in with his centrism, his third way movement, whatever, and takes over the scene. And in those seven years since then, you know, the conservative, traditional conservatives and the traditional socialists or left party, have, you know, just not been really effective. They've been in the doldrums, let's say. And they split it. They have various different left parties, you know, that fighting with each other, which is nonsense. And suddenly it took this opportunity for them to kind of get together. So the left parties have all quickly cobbled together a unified left party.
I think it's a Front Populaire, Popular Front.
The Popular Front. So that's all the left parties together. So they've got a manifesto more or less together in short order, and that's what they're going to be campaigning on. So there is an option there for people to vote for, supposedly, a grouping of traditional leftist socialist, which has been traditionally quite strong in France. Whether or not people will go with that, but that is a split. That would, you know, I think Macron's party's getting none, basically.
Macron's
party's really getting they're gone in that sense, you know. So it's going to be a split between, it'll be down to whether or not the quote-unquote far-right Le Pen's party gets an outright majority in Parliament, enough seats in Parliament to actually form a government on their own, or with some members of the Conservatives, or whether it'll be more socialist or whatever. But it's shaping up that there is an option there for either the far right or quote unquote the far left to form a government, and Macron can go back to the islands and his sweaty French sweaty island boys. But it's interesting because he as soon as he'd announced that he was dissolving government and calling new elections, he immediately went on in that same speech to the media where he announced that, he also went on the attack. He went on the campaign basically and started saying, okay, look, what you've got left here is the far right, which are a bunch of, what'll happen if the far right gets in? The far right are going to, like, we didn't say they were Nazis, but basically more or less, but they're mainly pro-Russian. And what's going to happen in Ukraine? Ukraine will no longer get any support, and people will be like, good.
That's what we want.
So he's delusional.
Yeah.
So that was meant to be a threat. Don't vote for the far right because Slava Ukraini. And
history will be different. Yeah, we know.
And then for the left, any left now is now the extreme left, and they're all anti-Semites.
Oh, yeah.
So
there is no, them for being anti-Semitic.
Yeah, he's calling them extreme left. So there's only now in France, according to Macron, there's only extreme right and extreme left, or there's only far right and far left. Which is ridiculous, you know what I mean? Because he's putting in...
Leaving him in the rational centre.
Yeah, but he's putting in those two groups members of the traditional conservatives, which are more or less centrists, you know, centre-conservative, centre-centre-right, and centre-left parties. And he's putting them all in. He's trying to make everybody think that they're all far-left and far-right. And then, so the far-left gets in when you've just got what's going to happen in the Middle East, he said. You've got, they're a bunch of anti-Semites. And it's like... Well, there's a lot of anti-Semitism. Yeah, there's a lot of justified anti-Semitism in the world today because of what Israel is doing. And by anti-Semitism, I don't mean, you know, obviously the definition of anti-Semitism, which is just hatred of Jews for no reason whatsoever. It's not even hatred of Jews. It's anger, frustration, directed against Israel for slaughtering Palestinians. That's, we know, anybody with any sense knows the anti-Semitism thing is just a canard that's used to spear people. But so that's what he said. But it's weird because it would be cool if you could have a joining of those two groups, the far right and the far left, which never would happen, obviously, because both of them together have the main group of rational policies. Of policies that are very, very rational and need to be the main policies of any government in the world today, let's say. Condemnation of Israel for slaughtering Palestinians. So we're just talking about condemning a government for slaughtering innocent civilians. Is there something wrong with that? Is that a bad thing? No. And then walking away from a proxy war in Ukraine where a country is being destroyed and European countries are being, you know, bankrupted. Taxpayers' monies are going to fund a war, to feed a war and keep it going. And so, yeah.
If you vote for one or the other, you vote against one of the wars.
Yeah, you're voting for something good. Ideally, you'd vote for, be able to vote for both, or there'd be a party that would represent both of those far-right and far-left policies, you know.
Alas.
There was one in 1930s in Germany. Strangely enough, I just thought it was very strange because if I look at what's being condemned by Macron and by a lot of people, a lot of the system in Europe and America today, if you look at what they call the far right and the far left, what those two groups together represent is nationalism, patriotism, socialism, kind of.
And they have a problem with bankers.
Yes.
Who tend to be from...
And anti-Israel. And when I put all those together, I was like, hang on a minute, somebody did this before.
Yeah.
And it's weird that today those things would be net positives for any government, for any government to have as their policy. Those would be net positives in the world today. But if any government were to adopt those policies today, they would pretty much be adopting the same things that the Nazis adopted
yeah.
in 1930s. And I'm like, how did that happen?
Well, you wonder, was it set up that way?
It's bizarre, but that's like 80, 90 years ago. If you stand up today and go, these things that, at least like from our perspective, make the most sense, yeah. like countries should look after their own interests. And the other one I didn't mention was anti-immigration. So you have nationalism, kind of, if you put the left, put the right, from the right you get nationalism, from the left you get socialism, from the right you get anti-immigration, and from the right, from the left you get anti-Israel. And I mean, those are things that the ordinary people in most countries today have a problem with, you know?
Yeah.
Like too much globalism, not enough focus on the interests of the
people
host,
at home.
People at home, the host country. So nationalism. They don't. There's too much immigration. There's too much like proxy war, warmongering overseas, which is what Macron supports, keeping a war going against Russia and the threat of nuclear war. People want to get rid of that. And Israel, most people are not happy with Israel slaughtering civilians, Palestinians. So, but that's all. That's basically, you know, Hitler. You're Hitler.
Yeah.
So, don't go there.
Yeah, that's why it's split that way. Over in the UK, Farage is. His yeah. Reform Party is overtaking the Tories in the polls. What we thought would happen
mm-hmm.
8 years ago now has finally happened.
Mm.
It's similar. This is the same Farage who's storming ahead of the Tories on most of those things, those net positives, those, the obvious political ground that's been vacated by the establishment. He just moves in,
mm-hmm.
except for one flaw. For the last 6 months, he's been berating the sea of people who turned up at massive pro-Palestinian
mm-hmm.
protests in London
mm-hmm.
and saying, this is the problem. You see all those immigrants, all those Hamas terrorist immigrants. It's like, Nigel, they're Britons. Look at the crowd. Mm-hmm. They're white. There's a few, you know, colourful figures in there. Of course, the vast majority of them are your fellow countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why shoot yourself in the foot? Mm-hmm. You must know better. Like, mm-hmm. But they all do it. They all do it. Marine Le Pen obviously turned her father's party around from
mm-hmm.
where it was at, which was kind of
mm-hmm.
Hitlerian,
mm-hmm.
in quotes, in the definition you just used,
mm-hmm.
to pro-Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's left the left.
This is why we can't have Israel. Good things, you know? We can't have nice things. You can have half of it.
Mm. Yeah, which obviously divides people.
Yes, and you get the perfect 50-50 split, which is the ultimate. It's almost like seems to be a design feature of Western democracy. In fact, they constantly tell us that the 50-50 split mm. is a sign of its health and vitality, mm. which is actually, no, it's a sign of its mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be vox populi, vox dei.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are alike in most things, and mm. they ought to, the will of the people, mm. be represented in majority. On all the core issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's health. But they tell you it's the opposite. They tell you it's sickness.
That's populism. But
and people sense it. The Auslander Rouse memes mm. creeping through all of this,
mm.
you know, popping up. They stamped it out. But that speaks to, like, they criticize it. It's just, you know, pro-Nazi racism. But it's not. It's speaking to something much. It's yeah. speaking to that.
It's a very different, very new landscape we're living in today. Like, I mean, like you're saying, like, there's... You know, the traditional order, like you say, that two-party system, left-right, usually conservative versus left, socialist, progressive, whatever, have been there for decades, certainly, you know, certainly since the last 100 years in the West. That seems, at least in France, and recent events in France and the UK, seems to be falling apart. And then there's other little intimations of people no longer happy with that left-right, or that... Yeah, left-right divide, you know, it's 50-50, like you said. So it's kind of good in a certain sense that people are responding in that way, you know, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to see eye to eye, and, you know, because they'll be continually divided by their political leaders. They'll be encouraged to separate from each other. They don't want any kind of a, a uni party, let's say, that's based on principles that are reflective of the will of the population, that most of the population actually want this and it's actually good for them. They don't want that happening and they're desperate to see that to make sure that stops. So, but they can't stop it. It's happening. So the best they can do is to manage it and try and sow more division, you know. And it's bizarre, like, you know, they talk about our Europe, Macron talks about Europe, where Europe is going to fall apart and our Europe is going to, and what do you call them, Borrell talking about the garden, the jungle is going to encroach in the garden, all this kind of stuff. But the policies of these people are encouraging that all the way. They claim to be worried about it happening, but what they do encourages it to gain speed and progress. So it's very strange. Very strange situation. Anyway, those you mentioned earlier on, there was the silly summit there in, I don't know what they actually call it. I just called it the silly summit in Switzerland, where they had a bunch of
the Ukraine peace summit.
Yeah, the silly summit. That's just a PR exercise. Obviously,
It's a shakedown too. No, give me money.
Give me money.
Kamala Harris turned up and said, "Here's another $1.5 billion."
Yeah, and. But it's also, well, definitely, you know, showing a united front as much as they can. But there was something like 90 government representatives and organizations there, and something like 80, but not all of them voted for it, agreed to it, or signed it. And basically, it didn't really say much other than, you know, we support Ukraine and we need to make sure we focus on Ukraine's economic prosperity and stuff. So, yeah, I think it was a trade show in a certain sense for Ukraine, with Ukraine on. Ukraine was as a commodity, you know, like if it's like a trade show.
Like a trade exhibition, yeah.
Yeah, like you've got something to sell, basically. A company has a trade show that has something to sell. Well, this was Ukraine, the country, selling itself to anybody who had come along and wanted to look at what was an offer, you know. So there's probably a bunch of different deals done. But the benefit of that was to get these countries, as many countries as possible, invested in Ukraine financially and monetarily, to invest money in Ukraine so that they have skin in the game, and therefore they would tend to, they hope anyway, would push back against Russia, you know, taking too much of Ukraine or winning too bigly in Ukraine, because then they have skin in the game and they're like, hang on a minute, you know, we've got investments here, you know. You know, so, but that obviously is something that Russia could work around and say, listen, your investments will be fine, we'll look after them, you know, especially. And it was the Saudis, Saudi representative said that that it's not credible, this summit on Ukraine is not credible without Russia. You know, it would only, any talk of peace, and I wasn't really talking about peace, but any talk of a peace summit or peace agreement is not credible, obviously, no, without Russia being there. So what's the point in having this?
Well, what it is, it's a summit to continue the war. It's a war summit. Because Russia's not there. Russia's excluded. Zelensky wouldn't let them, any representative, come from Russia. It's not that they aren't, you know, willing to attempt it.
And Dutch Prime Minister, a guy called Mark Rutte or something,
I think. Is he X now? Wilders is now PM, right? Or about to be?
No, Rutte is officially still the Prime Minister. And this is, he said, we all know we're only at the beginning of a path to peace. And despite some of us around this table having different opinions on how exactly to get to peace for Ukraine, let there be no mistake, we are totally united at a shared vision on principles, on values, on decency. And then he said, you do not invade another country. This is admonishing Russia. You do not invade another country. You do not abduct children. You do not play politics with the world's food supply. And you do not endanger nuclear safety. To which I would simply add, of course, because only America is allowed to do that. Because pretty much all of those things, the West, Western America and its allies have been doing for a very long time, so it's kind of funny. But then, hypocrisy is a way of life for those people, you know. So,
Did you see Trudeau at the family photo?
That's my.
You want to play that?
Yeah, that's actually my joke. I don't have a joke today, so this is actually my joke.
All right,
but you can play it. I'll play it again at the end. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, they, you know the spiel. They gather for the photo at the end,
mm-hmm.
and have a listen.
What a douchebag.
That's Trudeau saying that.
So yeah, prime retard.
Which Slava Ukraini, of course, was a Nazi soldier in World War II.
Canada's prime retard, Justin Trudeau. Yeah, he thought it was a good idea to shout that fascist slogan at the Silly Summit in Switzerland. And you notice not many people, you know.
He got a reply. There's a rejoiner from that.
Hero and Slava, yeah.
Yeah.
Glory to heroes. But yeah, it's an OUN, Ukrainian organization of Ukrainian nationalists in the 1930s, basically was their main slogan, and they were basically Nazis, Hitlerites. So, which is interesting though, so you have the leader, one of the leaders of the free world, a big douchebag, but one of the leaders of the free world, shouting what is essentially a Nazi slogan at a grouping, at a group meeting of leaders of the free democratic world, right? I mean, these are people who uphold the highest moral standards and are telling us all the time what's right and what's wrong and how we should vote here, should vote for whoever and not vote for these evil far right and stuff. But he shouts basically a fascist slogan. So if that's okay for him to shout that, then surely, like, if we take our lead from those people, though we shouldn't, but if we were to take our lead from them, then it's open season, right? I mean, there's no more anti-Semitism, right? I mean, he's basically shouting a Nazi slogan, right? So let's shout other Nazi slogans too. No?
Yeah, you can try, but there's code running in the background as to when it's applicable and when it isn't, and when you're out of line, and when you're banned, and when you're punished, and so on.
Don't make any sense,
okay, temporarily, you know. I thought it was interesting that on the eve of this, Putin announces his own statement at the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, a peace settlement. He said this before, but I don't think he said it quite this way. I mean, he said, listen, I'm not interested in a ceasefire or truce, because as we know, we've seen that before, it would just give the West the chance to rearm Ukraine for like the sixth time.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, here's a final settlement proposal. The withdrawal of all Ukrainian forces from the four breakaway regions, Donetsk, Lugansk, Kherson, Zaporizhia, which Russia has already declared to be part of the Russian Federation. The rest of Ukraine remains neutral and demilitarized, which he set out at the start of the SMO. And that's it. Now, these are basically Russia's minimal war aims. He's offering an off-ramp now at this juncture, saying, just what we have, just that, let's not go any further. He probably knows, though, that the West will reject it. And Rutte at that thing said, this is not serious. And Scholz has since said, no, he's bluffing.
Yep.
Bluffing about, well, I don't know what, but all Putin said was his or else, if not this, then he just said a continuation of the bloodshed, for which the moral responsibility will fall on the West,
and also
specifically the United States.
And also at a certain point in the future, if when this comes around again and some terms are offered, if we offer peace terms later, they won't be as favourable. Which is, you know, yeah, obvious, because Russia is, you know, making significant, albeit still slow enough progress, but it's taking quite a few towns as the days and weeks pass. Smaller villages and towns are continue to fall into under Russian control. So, by definition, at some point in the future, Russia will be in a stronger position. Russia will have taken more land, and will say, "Okay, now this land as well." But yeah. I think, I mean, I've said this before, but I think that from the very beginning, these people had the war planners in the West had a vision and knew what way this whole thing was going to end, which was in the partition of Ukraine, roughly down the middle. And Russia isn't there yet, so there's still more money to be made, there's still more, you know, weapons to be sold, etc., etc., and there's far money to be made out of this war. The war isn't done yet, let's keep it going. And they won't come to the table in any serious way or take any statements by Russia seriously in terms of peace or agreements until Russia has achieved what it set out to achieve.
But Russia has just stated its minimal aim is that whatever is west of the Dnieper is not NATO. No, there's no US ballistic missiles based there. It's not NATO. So your partition has everything west being ours and owned by the West. Mm-hmm. Russia is saying now at this juncture, that's off the table as a minimal war aim.
Yeah, well,
do you think that they can come back on that?
But that's,
And likewise, on the other side, the response to that was, Stoltenberg just stuttered his way through and said, but that would mean Russia would win, just giving them the four and Ukraine remaining as a viable state, albeit non-NATO. He just stuttered his way through, like, that's impossible.
Yeah.
They cannot even countenance that.
Can't even countenance the four regions, but...
But they could countenance in the back of their minds or some of them.
They have to say that. They have to say those things in order to keep the war going, right? They have to, when they want the war to keep going, they have to reject any. But these people are very cynical, and like I said, it's not personal to them. Ultimately, they can turn the dime, and they're very, very cynical, very insincere people. They lie all the time; they're lying to the public all the time, and they have their own, real politic, reality based community behind the scenes, which is that
they envision keep quiet.
A petition. Because, like, look at it. Tomorrow, they could, if they wanted, send in their 500,000 NATO country troops into Western Ukraine with, suitable equipment, and Russia wouldn't, and claim that it's a...
You think Russia would blink?
No. Well, no. They would blink, yeah. I mean, it's not they blink, they wouldn't do anything. Like, I mean, they could send them in as a peacekeeping force. We're here to, protect our interests and, this half of Ukraine. And we're basically taking it as a protectorate of NATO now, and that's it. So, and we're not going to attack Russia. We're not going to fire any missiles at Russia. But we're taking this half of Ukraine. I don't think Russia would just then start kinzaling NATO soldiers, NATO equipment in Western Ukraine.
Well, they already have on the sly, because everyone agrees that they weren't really there when they were.
Well, of course, yeah. But
if they really are there,
yeah, officially,
okay, then they wouldn't.
And I think they'll only do that.
Devil's advocate
They'll only do
did
that.
Did you see any of the interview by the Serbian president? He was in Switzerland, presumably to appease the West. He's part of the powwow over the peace settlement. Mm-hmm. But he gave a serious, seriously depressing. He's done this before, though, over the last year. Kind of very...
Vukic?
Vukic. He's given a very, a doomer take on the whole thing. It's an hour-long interview. It's really good. I've got a clip that's 5 minutes long. I don't want to hear the whole thing, but basically he concluded war is coming. Unless something changes. The two sides, their positions are so implacable that there'll be some kind of war, hot conflict in the next 3 to 4 months. No.
I don't think so.
He's hoping to pressure, he's doing his bit to pressure
the call for saner heads and pull them back from the brink and stuff, but those people aren't going to the brink, if you know what I mean. This is all. I mean, looking back at history, that analysis hasn't been proven wrong. That these people are very cynical. Mm-hmm. They're not serious. They talk it up. They whip up the jingoism and the war rhetoric and to terrify the population, and that's largely to get people in that state of transmarginal inhibition or whatever, and keep them distracted, but also to encourage people to anybody who might want to go and support the war effort and to keep it going and keep popular opinion behind it. They have to talk up the Russian threat, and but it's going a bit to another level where they're talking about. Many people have been worried about nuclear war in recent months, really for the past 2 years, And that, again, obviously is a scary thing for a lot of people. I saw a poll that 60% of Russians are afraid that there might be nuclear war and stuff, you know. So that's useful, just to keep everybody in thrall. But I don't think they have any intention of going there.
Okay.
And I don't see a situation. They all know, like that we talked about it before, mutually assured destruction. There can't really be any hot, direct, kinetic, you know, in any to any significant degree before they pull back and seeing our heads at that point hold sway. There can't be any significant outbreak of war between NATO, i.e. the US, the UK, whatever, mainly the US, and Russia, because of the obvious potential for it to quickly end up in a nuclear exchange. And I don't think any of them are willing to cross that line, because it's not a good idea for anybody, even for them.
You know, you're probably the only person on the planet who's, you know, sure it's going to be fun, that they won't go to that.
Yeah, well, but I'm not saying that. I mean,
but you don't care.
No.
I'm one and they're wrong.
yeah. I mean, well, I'm not even saying that I'm right. I'm just looking at it and I'm saying that looks
that's
like
most likely. That's
most likely the situation.
That's been how history has unfolded. And I'm not putting this up to say no, to prove you wrong, but this could in fact perfectly play into what you're saying. Maintain a strategy of tension, make sure people keep involved in the drama, whatever side they take. House of Representatives of the United States this week passes a defense bill automatically registering men aged 18-26 for draft. Be clear, this is not the draft. This is a kind of basically like a database you must register for. It is new. It's kind of a half step. The article explains that it is preparatory to a draft, which hasn't happened in the United States since Vietnam War half a century ago. But It echoes and it fits with the other pattern of Macron wishing for the return of national service in France, Germany saying they are going to push through such for 18, 22 year olds in Germany, and likewise it being not that he's going to win, but it's the first thing that Rishi Sunak announced on his election campaign in the current UK election.
Mm-hmm.
National service, jolly good. So that's...
Yeah, that's for me. I'm not sure what that's about. I mean, is that just to put people in a? Is that just more propaganda? Because I mean, they can talk about national service, but I want to see it actually happen. And I want to see people.
What do you mean in practice?
Yeah, I want to see people actually going to national service. I mean, that usually takes quite a long time for people to actually for it to become part of the new normal, where all 18-year-olds suddenly start going for national service in a country where they haven't gone to national service for decades. You know. So that would take a while, and what would the purpose of it be? I don't know. I'm not saying that no bad things are going to happen. I'm just saying there's not going to be any nuclear war, but I think there'll be more likely to be something else that'll come along, that they'll drop on people. Like I said, there's been a lot of talk about another disease X, a new disease X, or other food bars in different areas, you know, in different ways, maybe economic issues, whatever, that could make things not as horrible as a nuclear war, but pretty bad nonetheless, you know, and give people something else to think about and keep them controlled. Because ultimately, like, my perspective on this is that this is all about population control, you know, that long before now, politicians, particularly in the Western world, have gone from being representatives of the people to try and, you know, provide a decent standard of living and quality of, you know, civilization, let's say, for the people in the country, to wanting to control people and seeing them as a resource, and they become ponderized or psychopathologized, the scum rises to the top type thing, and that's happened over quite a long period of time, and now you have deviant psychopathological people in positions of power who see ordinary people as a threat and an enemy, and they're just out to twist them and control them and manipulate them, and they don't like them. Like, Macron really doesn't like the French people at all, you know what I mean? He hates them, you know?
Yeah.
And he especially hates them now since they've rejected him, you know what I mean?
He told them they've no culture.
Yeah.
The day he arrived in office. France, yeah. No culture. France, yeah. The fount of all European Christendom, castles, civilization, basically the, after the restart of the collapse of Rome.
Yeah.
France had no culture.
Yeah.
So enjoyed the floor that day and I'd never been able to recover.
So these people don't like the ordinary people in the country and they're willing to do a lot of nasty things to them. But they don't want to wipe them out. Again, the analogy of, you know, farmers and their herd, right? A farmer doesn't want to just slaughter all of his herd. He wants to keep them corralled and so they can keep producing for him, you know. I think that's where it's at. So all of these things, I just look at them through that lens, first and foremost. So any fear-mongering or anything that seeks to distract and scare and cow a lot of people, no pun intended, the herd, cow the herd, is designed to, anything that seems to do that...
That's probably what...
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Not that what they're saying is going to
unfold.
Going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
They'll scare people with the boogeyman, scare children with the boogeyman, but the boogeyman doesn't exist, right?
The point is the scaring.
Right. So that's just the way I look at it, and I don't see... And again, I mean, that applies to COVID. It was on full display during COVID, right? They really went to town on the terrorization of the population for no good reason other than control measures. So I think anything that comes along will just be another version of that. Not necessarily, maybe, from a medical point of view, but also from anything else. You know?
So in that context, even if the war hawks on either or both sides, but I'm thinking mostly on the Western side, are that crazy that they're currently going all in and they think they can oust or out-nuke or pre-nuke or whatever Russia and break it up like due to the Polish Prime Minister is gloating at this peace summit for Ukraine. Yes, let's come here to discuss peace. So here's our plan. We get Ukraine back and then we move into Russia and we break it up and we free the 200 different ethnicities. What the fuck? So he's obviously nuts and he's going, he's like the tyrant in the peak COVID who was like, what's next? We start forcibly vaccinating them? Okay, awesome. Get the police, get the army. We're ready to go. But then the best plans of mice and men, there's a shift that's kind of nothing to do with them in a way. It's almost like a systemic shift.
Mm-hmm.
What causes that? Well, the closest approximate 3D human agency-based cause we have is that Putin, in tandem with Washington, because he was responding to what was about to happen in Ukraine, launches the SMO.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the temperatures go plummets on mass arrests and forced vaccinations, you know? And the courts start going, oh yeah, you lost your job? Oh, yeah, that was illegal. Yeah, what's that? Your wife killed herself because, oh, that's sad.
Mm.
She didn't want to be vaccinated. Well, it turns out she didn't have to be.
Mm.
It was her choice. And Trudeau gets up on TV and he says, oh, we were never going to force. Oh, it was your choice.
Mm-mm.
You made a perfectly free choice. Grinning like a Cheshire cat, you know. But that was a sort of system change that these guys just reacted to like everything else.
Yeah, but that's technically that's true, you know, certain sense. That's the way this world works, you know, where especially now today it's on full display, where those people were given a free choice. But you have to understand what a free choice is. A free choice is that you're free to choose between two options, but that doesn't stop us from weighing one of the options to whatever extent we can. We can, you know, a free choice in the context of our manipulation and lies to you. That's what a free choice is today, you know. I mean, otherwise, because in a certain sense, it wouldn't be a choice. There wouldn't be any choice to make in a certain sense if we lived in a kind of utopia and where politicians all told the truth and they were always working.
And the population was informed.
Yeah.
That's a utopia now, isn't it?
Yeah, the population is informed and politicians were working in the interest of the people and were always doing things that were genuinely good for the population. The vast majority of people would see that and say, well, yeah, there's no choice here. Obviously, I'll do what the government says because the government are full of good people and they're working in their interest and we love them and they love us.
That seems to be the case in Russia.
Maybe. Well, that's where Putin keeps getting
80% election results.
Yeah. So
it does happen.
It's El hard,
Salvador,
though.
87%.
Yeah. It's hard when people are lied to by government. But, you know, it's a learning process, I suppose. But then there was also, you noticed, and it's not, you know, insignificant, obviously, that those Russian ships and the submarine ending up in Havana port there this week, you know. People look at that and say, oh, you know, this is...
Connect the two.
This is kind of bear pigs. This is obviously a show of strength. This is like we could, you know, we have a submarine that has nuclear missiles on it, but it's capable of that, you know, so... But yeah, people jump at that all the time. All they see is nuclear war. All they see is, especially boomers, you know, who grew up during the Bay of Pigs and all that kind of stuff, you know, and the Cold War.
You mean the Cuban Missile Crisis? But yeah, the Bay of Pigs.
Sorry, Cuban Missile Crisis.
Stage crew, the bots. Yeah. And I hear you. And there is a key bit of corroborating data for your everyone just chill the F out. Stance on this. It's that Putin made his grand announcement, his threat, the or else,
mm-hmm.
that didn't come in his recent statement to time with the Ukrainian version of a peace settlement, was made last week, but the week before. I can't remember what it was at, but he said it clearly. It was probably at Spief, at the St. Petersburg Forum. It said, our response will be asymmetrical.
Hmm.
We're not going to start firing missiles at incoming NATO troops. But he said, well, what if we were to make available weapons, our newer weapons?
Yeah, in the Middle East, yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah. That speaks of a long-term game, an indirect, avoiding head-on conflict.
Hmm. Just stay the course, keep going. These people are they're full of shit, they don't know what they're doing, and they're just... the Western leaders are just cynical. They're just trying to build the public purse. They're just trying to rob the public purse to feed their defense contractor friends and stuff and themselves. So, you know, his attitude seems to be the same attitude that I have in a certain sense, or his perspective seems to be like he doesn't believe anything they say. You know, he puts in place things to kind of like tell them, you know, just calm yourself down there, don't be, you know, I know you're all a bit crazy. I mean, you're literally all a bit crazy. I've seen that over a long period of time. I'm just going to put certain things in place to make sure you don't go off the wall. I'm kind of like doing this for your own protection in a certain sense. You know, this is to protect you from going too far. I don't think you would, but I can't be sure because you really are, you fuckers are off the leash, like, you know, in a certain sense. There's some nut jobs in amongst you. So I need to just make sure that you understand that I'm serious and I'm not backing down. And once I've done that, you can go crazy. You knock yourselves out. You talk about all sorts of things. You call me Hitler. You say, I'm gonna be in Portugal next week. Say, you know, yeah. Say it all. Go ahead. I don't give a shit. Like, basically, you can, because I know what you're doing, and it's your right to do it. Like, you have control over these countries and these populations, and it's your right to exploit them whatever way you want. And it's the people's right to decide what they want to do about it, whether they're going to accept that exploitation or whether they're able to see it. That's all your stuff. Go ahead. I'm just protecting my stuff. I'm just going to carry on doing that.
Yeah. Long term. That's why the powers that be connect, namely Washington mostly, connect the importance of defeating the far right nationalism in Europe in domestic electoral polls because Putin. Because otherwise there's a disparate connection. But they're correct to see the two as related because Putin's longer plan would be plan. I make it sound like he intends this. This is what they want you to think. That this is all by his design. Mm. It's horseshit. But that's why, out of the blue, Russian influence became the thing in 2016. It's like Trump's like, no, I did that. Fuck you. Putin didn't pull me. I got here. American people chose me. Mm. But they flipped the narrative because it's smart. Because it shows that they're aware that Putin / Russian / China and multipolarity success is dependent on what happens with beliefs in the billion or so Westerners, Europeans and Americans.
And it's the end of their rule and their reign. The pathocratic rule and pathocratic reign would be, multipolarity would be the end of that. You know, they're coming from the position of
it would be post
global hegemon,
and empire.
Yeah. Unipolarity versus towards multipolarity, and suddenly they all have to take a pay cut, and a lot of them are out of jobs, and they're just So that's what they're fighting for. It's just pure self-interest, you know.
Can you imagine Britannia no longer ruling the waves?
I know, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But the problem is that, it's like we've said
we have to play
is that
polo and go fox hunting.
Yeah, it's very painful for those countries, and it can be existential. You know what I mean? When you've lived high on the hog for a long time, and you're fat and self-satisfied for a long time from thieving from the rest of the world, and suddenly the rest of the world says no, and they say, listen, you can't do that anymore. You're literally going to have to, like, your portion for your dinner is going to become a lot smaller. And for that person, it feels like you're starving them.
Mm.
This is cruel and unusual punishment that you're subjecting us to here, to force us to tighten our belts. We're not used to that, we don't want to do it, and we're going to fight you all the way. And yeah, you know, from a natural order, balance, justice, all that kind of stuff, it makes sense that they should take that cut. But they don't see it that way. And it's like, you know, they're like, if we get what we can get through whatever means we need to get it, and we don't care. And that's where we're at, you know. So we'll see how it works out.
Did you see Lindsey Graham's comments about trillions of minerals under Ukraine?
Mm. You've said that before, haven't you?
Have you heard that before?
Well,
I remember
I said
about Afghanistan.
Yeah. I think they have made reference to, I don't know about minerals, but obviously it's, you know, there's food supply and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he dangles this. I think it's, I don't know, I don't know how true this is. It sounds, the first thing it made me think of was that he's trying to get Trump's attention. He's thinking ahead. Here's a reason to be invested in. Go ahead.
They're sitting on $10 to $12 trillion of critical minerals in Ukraine. They could be the richest country in all of Europe. I don't want to give that money and those assets to Putin to share with China. If we help Ukraine now, they can become the best business partner we ever dreamed of. That $10 to $12 trillion of critical mineral assets could be used by Ukraine and the West, not given to Putin and China. This is a very big deal how Ukraine ends. Mm-hmm. Let's help them win a war we can't afford to lose. Let's find a solution to this war. But they're sitting on a gold mine to give Putin $10 or $12 trillion of critical minerals that he will share with China is ridiculous.
China. Well, that's his perspective, yeah. Well, obviously, Russia and China would say, well, we would like $10 or $12 trillion. I know you guys would like it. And he's holding out the, he's getting desperate there. He's now appealing to the American people, saying it's money, you know what I mean? Like, he might say, like, look, you realize it's not, forget about ideology. It's not about...
Yeah, suddenly that went out the door.
Forget about
freedom and democracy,
forget about freedom
and Putin's
democracy.
A tyrant.
Forget about that. It's about the money. We're talking about $10 or $12 trillion going to America.
Oh, now you're talking to me.
Talking. Do you all want a cut of that? Every individual American, you know?
Paycheck.
Paycheck.
Pay rise.
Stimulus, paycheck.
Pay rise for you or China?
Yeah.
You or
you
China.
Chinese
you China.
To have it? So maybe you need to sign up for the draft and go and fight for that $12 trillion in Ukraine. Huh? How about that? And let me make it more explicit. You know, you want to divide 12 trillion, 300 and what is it, 20 million Americans into 12 trillion. You know how much money that is? It's actually not that much. It's a few $1,000 each, but still, it's better than nothing, right? Well, it's pretty transparent at this point what's going on, too.
Well, thank you, Lindsay, for, you know.
Anyway.
Just saying the quiet part out loud, assuming there's some basis to that.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden's been found guilty
of not much, of none of the things that he actually really did that are worth prosecuting him for.
Right, exactly.
Well, it's
illegal firearm. He had a handgun.
Yeah, when he was
the way he bought it
on drugs or something. He was taking drugs and bought a gun.
And his parents' response is, "We're so proud."
Yeah,
he finally has a criminal record.
Yeah. What a nice boy. He's been
blooded.
You can imagine how much, you know, in the way that he was protected and Biden was protected, and that's what they're going for. So he's basically like, they basically said this is a crackhead who bought a weapon illegally, and he can get years. He probably won't get any years for it.
Theoretically, he could get 25 years.
Theoretically, but unlikely, because he's being protected. But you can imagine when they throw that out, that's the least bad thing they can find about him, you know. You know what I mean? So you can imagine what
he gets up to.
What he could really be done for, and him and his dopey father. So Well, he actually appeared on, what was it on? He appeared on CBS News, Hunter Biden, there recently. Hadn't been invited, but he appeared anyway. Just check out what he does here. It's interesting.
A member of the U.S. attorney's team told the court that there was no deal. And one of the lead attorneys for Hunter Biden, Chris Clark, said as far as he was concerned, quote, the plea deal was null and void. It was an extremely complex legal discussion over the last couple of hours, but I would
down Hunter, down bad
to
boy.
This. It does appear that the two parties have been talking past
not in the Oval Office, Hunter.
In this respect, the U.S. Attorney's Office says there is an ongoing investigation, and there could be criminal charges in the future.
That last one, did you do that?
No,
you saw that. Okay.
Anyway, so that's the joke. That's my joke. I don't have a joke this week. I'm sorry. You have to wait. I'll come back with a good one next week. The best cheesy joke of all time. But what else? Dan, you got anything else? Because I've got an important engagement to go to. I'm going to a Trump rally.
Yeah.
A Trump Le Pen rally.
I just picked one. There are so many events this week where Joe Biden just looks an absolute state. This is him, I think it's a Juneteenth do at the White House.
I used to float, now I just
look at the caption. How my cat looks at the ghost in my house when I have guests over.
God love him. I mean, he's a poor old pedo. On that same one, there's it's pretty sad actually. If you look at this one, at 18 seconds, just watch. You see Kamala Harris, and that's her husband beside her. And put the sound up as well. Go ahead. Go back to 18 seconds. It's pretty sad, actually. It's like so. The chorus of the song is, "I'm gonna love nobody but you. I'm gonna love nobody but you." So you dance about and you do the heart sign.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna love and go then, like nobody and then but you.
Point out the other half.
Yeah. Or well, you know, that's the singer. Whatever does their own sign. But that's what Kamala's doing. She's doing that. I'm gonna love nobody but you. And her husband's doing it as well.
Uh-huh.
And he looks at her, if you watch it, he looks at her at 18 seconds, he looks at her and he's like, you know, here's the part. And he does, I'm going to love nobody but you. And he looks at it like you. And she looks at him and goes, and points upwards, right? She just like doesn't point at him, you know. He's like, he's like, you just left me hanging there, you know what I'm saying? And she's like, I don't like you. Because I'm a freaky harpy bitch.
Who loves only myself.
Who loves, I don't know who she loves. I don't even want to think about who Kamala Harris loves. Baphomet or something. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So that's all we got time for this week, folks, unfortunately. I don't think there was much else going on other than, I mean, we could talk about, yeah, we'll talk next week about Gaza.
That massacre, which was breaking news last Sunday, that was a hell of a...
Yeah.
It was worse than we thought.
Look, it's just the same. You don't need to know anything about Gaza. All you need to know about Gaza is that the Israeli government has had a plan for decades, literally decades, to implement a final solution for all the Palestinians, which is to drive the Palestinians out again, like the same in 1948. But this time, you know, kill them, basically. Kill as many as possible and drive them out of the country and remove the Palestinian problem from Israel definitively. And they've had that plan for a very, very long time. And it came along recently where this kind of like apparently staged kind of October 7th event, not staged in the sense that it didn't happen, but that it was allowed to happen pretty clearly to give them the justification to do what they're doing now. And they've been doing it for 7-8 months. And they probably, the figures of Palestinian civilian dead are probably 200,000, maybe more. And it's still only 10% of the population. But they're carrying that on inexorably, and they're going to continue to do it. And that's all you need to know. And they use the hostages. They don't want to free the hostages. Every time Hamas says, here, you can have your hostages back for a ceasefire, they say no. They immediately respond by saying no and or not saying no and you know, dropping another bomb on a bunch of Palestinians. That's their response, right? So they obviously don't want any agreement. They don't want the hostages back. They want to use the hostages and have been using the hostages to justify killing as many Palestinians as they possibly can. That's all you have to know. That's all that's going on.
Right. Yeah. Case in point, that thing last week was a rescue operation to get four of them succeeded, but they went into a camp on a humanitarian aid truck that came off that pier, armed to the teeth. They were rumbled in the camp, panicked themselves without actually being attacked by the Gazan refugees or Hamas or anyone, and called in airstrikes and killed 300 people.
Yeah.
And then all the media told the world was success. Yeah. We managed to get four of our guys.
Yeah.
After Hamas had offered them for free,
they
said, no. And then they just blew up a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because in their minds, they're so paranoid, they thought they were under attack.
Yeah.
Called an airstrike. I mean, and the key thing of that, another key thing that American Special Forces were.
With American Special Forces and using American bombs. So America is engaged in, you know, genocide daily. Slow, progressive genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza, and the American government is front and center in directly involved in that, and the American people are, you know, to one extent or another, I don't know how many are supporting it, but a lot of them seem to be supporting it, and, you know, that's all there is to say about it, and you can just make up your own mind. You know, at this point in history, it's come down to forget about all the details and the nuances, and there are none, you know, in that respect. It's just psychopathy on display in the form of, you know, Western governments, and particularly the Israeli government, and they're just being psychopathic. They're killing people and slaughtering people because they enjoy doing it. So you decide which side you want to be on that. You want to support that, or you don't want to not support that?
Amen.
It's not hard. Anyway, so we'll leave it there for this week, folks. We hope you enjoy the show and our chat and our discussion. And thanks for commenting and watching and listening or whatever, and we'll be back next week with another one on whatever nonsense has been going on between now and then. So until then, have a good week.
Thanks for watching. Bye all.
Can't stop the signal now.